to the Pepin Podcast on major themes in physical education research. This is episode 87 and explores chapter 11, the concluding chapter of Tony Rossig and colleagues' book, Workplace Learning in Physical Education, Emergent Teachers' Stories from the Staff Room and Beyond. This week I'm delighted to be recording this live from the PE Institute and to welcome Jonathan Jones in person to respond as the practitioner responder. I thank him for his considered words and for taking the time to respond. Walking the talk, creating positive, future-orientated learning spaces in schools and staff rooms is vital if the practices of physical education are to be similarly future-orientated. The sense, one I share with the authors on concluding this book, is one of disappointment. Not overriding disappointment, because I can see that some of the participants had positive experiences, but certainly enduring disappointment given how few of the participants are still, at the time the book went to press, in teaching. The hemorrhaging of future teachers cannot simply be attributed to poor quality candidates. The simple fact is they all passed the course and qualified as teachers. Instead, it could be attributed to poor quality experiences. It would be easy to attribute this loss of beginning teachers to their experiences of workplace or work-integrated learning. Indeed, that is what the evidence of this study and the authors, I feel, suggest. The full extent of their teacher education experiences, however, need to be considered if we are to better understand what went wrong. What we do learn from this book, however, is that for many of the pre-service and beginning teachers in this study, the staff room specifically and the practicum more generally were not seen as positive learning spaces. These places did not provide opportunities to transform practice and to make a difference, but were, instead, places where new teachers engaged in self-preservation and image management. They were not places in which new teachers could take chances and try out new ideas. Indeed, innovations that, at the very least, intrigued them in their university classes had little chance to survive and prosper in the real world. Instead, these were places where they learnt the established script and played their predefined role. While we learn nothing of their university-based teaching education experiences, we learn a lot, and not much of it good, of their school-based experiences. The narratives presented throughout this book speak of a mixed bag when it came to the practicum. They speak of the ability of these teachers to live up to the standards, but not live down to the practices of teaching. They speak loudly of vastly different experiences, which is to be expected and celebrated, and vastly different standards of care, which shouldn't. Rossi and colleagues hold that we have a profession that, like most, provide opportunities for work-placed or work-integrated learning that will vary across the many sites where such learning takes place. At the same time, we have a set of centralised measures or ways of making a judgment to assess, first, the suitability of teachers to enter the profession, and second, the quality of the teacher once she or he is part of the system. So on the one hand, we have different experiences, and on the other, we have standardised expectations of what pre-service and beginning teachers can achieve in these spaces. There is, as the authors suggest, a certain incompatibility between the freedoms afforded to schools and the centralised control imposed by government. What's more, it also imagines the staff room as a benevolent society in which the greater good is always prioritised, which this book would suggest is very far from the truth. What emerges from this concluding chapter, indeed from the whole book, is a very real sense that we need to question the social spaces that exist in the staff room. We need to see, identify, and re-condemn the condemned practices that seem to survive there. We need to create spaces where discussions, safe discussions, can occur about the purpose of this space. We need to acknowledge that such spaces call for the compliance and the maintenance of the status quo. We need to see these as places in which new teachers aren't required to match our ideals around teaching and where they need to perform this identity, at the cost perhaps of their true identity, so convincingly that they can pass the course. We need to see that it doesn't have to be a space that is supportive of obsolete practice and which positions many of these as unchallengeable facets of practice. In short, the staff room is often a place that grants power through conformity. Instead of accepting these norms as unchallengeable, we need to ask ourselves what we identify as. Do we accept that we are the gatekeepers of practice with the power to either sanction or marginalise new ideas? Do we hold that it is the job of new teachers to read the social space of the staff room, to decipher or decode its practices, or are we there to help pre-service and beginning teachers evolve the subject? Rossi and colleagues ask, what spaces do we have and what spaces do we want, before asking us to see the difference? What clearly emerges from this chapter and this book is the need for high-quality induction for pre-service and beginning teachers. Such experiences would challenge not only the formal and planned learning spaces in the school and classroom, but also the non-formal and unplanned learning spaces found in the staff room.
Such an induction would start in teacher education programs and focus on preparing new teachers for the staff room before moving into the school. Fundamentally, such an induction would provide and support all learners, old and new, to establish identities that would allow them to meaningfully participate in induction. The question I'm left with is, who are the standard setters? Who decides what is acceptable and what isn't? Is it the legendary teachers we met last week, or is it a collective effort? Whoever it is, they need to be collectively guided by a vision of good teaching, and they need to be willing to reanalyze taken for granted truths. Rossi and colleagues hold that the field must be able to justify what they consider represents good practices, and practice being the type of citizens expected within teaching. In concluding this blog, in this series of blogs, I am left to acknowledge that while there is unpredictable and messiness in the reality of schools and staff rooms, this shouldn't be allowed to impact on the quality of the educative experiences of our students, be they in school or in university stroke practicum. Fundamentally, and drawing on the words of Rossi and colleagues, we consider it to be non-negotiable that the learning made available through the workplace and, in the specific case of this study, the departmental office or staff room, must be of higher quality. It needs to conform to all decent ethical standards and should be comparable as a professional learning space across all the sites and participants.
Practitioner response by Jonathan Jones.
This blog is right on the mark when it comes to the effect of the staff room on the development of a novice teacher. This development isn't just limited to content knowledge, but also in the professional responsibilities a teacher must develop in order to be successful in their career. To me, these responsibilities are in some sense more important than the content knowledge a teacher possesses. Without the ability to act with professionalism, a teacher lacks vital skills such as perseverance, resourcefulness, and the ability to communicate. These can be aided by a strong staff room committed to developing a young teacher. Teachers just out of university are anxious to fit in with their new colleagues. As a 22-year-old teacher in a school full of veterans, I had personal experience with staff room dilemma. Do I participate in conversation or actions that may not be the best for my development, or do I find my own way with the risk of standing out? Why does a teacher have to even consider either choice? There should be a system in place that ensures the staff room stays positive and ideal for learning and development. I also like the point of having university give prospective teachers effective strategies on how to thrive in the staff room environment. However, I am not optimistic about this solution. University fails to instruct prospective teachers about many things that are not related to pedagogy. Consequently, I would like to see universities provide instruction on important teacher skills, such as parent communication, dealing with coworkers, and developing relationships with students.
So in concluding, how does this discussion relate to you, to your experiences? Did it make you think or consider something? I'd love to hear your thoughts, and so would others, so please share at www.peprn.com. Thanks for listening. I'm in France next week, so I'm taking a break from the podcasts, but I'll return soon with a new book. Please take the time to visit the Pepin site and vote on what we should be discussing next. Acknowledgements. I would like to thank Jonathan for his contribution and for recording this podcast live with me, and for taking the time to reflect on this blog. I would also like to thank Vicky Goodyear for her work behind the scene as copy editor. Her help certainly forms a vital part of the production of this podcast and in getting it out on time and in a semblance of coherence. However, it is important to note that any mistakes that remain are mine. This is an audio version of the Pepin blog that can be found at www.peprn.com. Thank you.